Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're looking at some source material today that, well, it really pushes back against this modern idea of radical self-sufficiency. You know, we're often sort of conditioned to think going it alone is strong.
Right. A sign of real capability.
Exactly. But these sources argue pretty strongly the opposite, that isolating yourself isn't just lonely, it's actually a direct route to failure. We're diving into some ancient texts today, specifically looking at Proverbs 18.1 to really get at why we need others, why we need accountability and sound wisdom in pretty much everything we do.
Yeah, and our mission here for you listening is to pull out the specific reason why this kind of isolation is so damaging. It's not just about feeling alone or, you know, being an introvert. The material suggests that this kind of strategic isolation, it's an active choice.
Active? How so?
Well, it argues it's often rooted in a kind of self-deception. And it's linked to pursuing desires that maybe aren't convenient to discuss. We want to unpack that specific mechanism, that internal rebellion against wisdom.
Okay, so let's unpack this first big idea. We are better together. The sources make this case, which feels a bit counterintuitive, right? That even things we think of as totally individual.
Right, like solo sports.
Exactly. They argue you just can't perform them consistently well without help. Doesn't matter how talented you are, how smart, how many degrees you have.
It's fascinating how they go straight for that myth of the lone genius. They use sports examples where you literally see one person competing alone.
Like Tiger Woods.
Precisely.
Yeah.
You know, arguably the greatest golfer ever. But the sources point out his incredible dominance decade after decade. It needed constant input, constant calibration from coaches like Hank Haney. Or think about Serena Williams in tennis, just dominant. But she wasn't out there figuring it all out solo. Patrick Mouratoglou was crucial for her strategy, her perspective. The point isn't just, oh, they had coaches. It's that without that external view, that critique, seeing things you inevitably miss.
You can't keep it up.
You can't sustain excellence. You might have flashes, sure, but the system for consistency, that requires outside input.
Okay, but isn't there a risk here? Like, are we saying any time spent working alone, focused, is bad? Where's the line between healthy concentration and this destructive isolation the sources talk about?
That's a great question. And the distinction they seem to draw is about motive and outcome. Destructive isolation is specifically about avoiding inconvenient truths or accountability. Healthy focus, on the other hand, might involve periods alone, but it integrates external wisdom before or after. Doesn't actively rebel against it.
Okay.
The sources use some really powerful language about needing systems. You know, professional resilience, personal resilience. It's impossible without these external checks and balances. They even bring in analogies from faith, like the body of Christ, to illustrate that even spiritual health needs connected parts working together. No single part thrives totally alone.
Right. So the takeaway is that outside input isn't a nice to have. It's actually fundamental for success, whether that's, I don't know, running a project or just figuring out your own life.
Exactly. A non-negotiable, according to this material. Okay, so if we accept that premise that accountability is key for consistency, then we can look closer at how Proverbs 18.1 defines this destructive isolation.
Right, let's hear that again.
One who isolates himself pursues selfish desires. He rebels against all sound wisdom.
Rebels. That's a strong word.
It really is. It frames isolation not as just drifting away, but as an active choice against something, against wisdom.
So why do we do it then? If it's rebellion, why does it often feel so logical, maybe even necessary when we're in it?
Well, that's the tricky part, isn't it? When we isolate, we essentially create our own echo chamber. You cut off those external checks, and what fills the void? Usually it's just ourselves, our own biases, our own justifications.
Self-confirmation.
Exactly. The sources claim that without those outside reference points, things that otherwise wouldn't make any sense at all would begin to, if left to ourselves, to navigate.
Wow. So you start thinking crazy things are logical because there's no one there to say, hang on a second.
Pretty much. You end up consulting only your past self, maybe repeating the same mistakes, but convincing yourself it's a brilliant new insight this time. You become your own most agreeable advisor.
Which changes the meaning, doesn't it? It suggests we're not isolating just because we're tired or overwhelmed. We're isolating because, maybe unconsciously, we expect our ideas to be challenged.
That seems to be the core argument, yes.
You know, this reminds me of that that really vivid analogy the sources use, the football one.
Oh, the running back.
Right. The play's design, the blocking is set up to go right, the whole system, the external wisdom is pointing right. But the running back, in that moment, thinks, nope, I see daylight over there to the left. I know better. And he just goes rogue.
That's it. That's the perfect picture of this rebellion. He thinks he's smarter, faster, sees something everyone else missed.
But everyone watching, coaches, teammates, probably the fans, are all yelling.
What are you doing? Get back at the
plot. Yeah, follow the blocks. But he's already committed to his own idea, his solo run. And that decision, born from that isolated confidence.
It pretty much guarantees failure for the team, for the system. Even if he somehow gains a yard, he broke the structure designed for success.
Yeah.
And that running back scenario, it leads us right back to the motive, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Which is what the sources really synthesize as the root cause.
Which is?
Self-isolation, at its core, is driven by selfish desires.
Okay, selfish desires. How do they define that? Is it just wanting bad things?
Not necessarily bad in a moral sense, but definitely self-focused. They define it really precisely, wanting what we want, when we want it, how we want it.
Okay, so it's about immediacy, control.
Exactly. It's that drive for immediate gratification or getting your own way without the hassle of collaboration or maybe the delay that comes with getting input or being accountable.
That makes sense. And it connects back to the proverb, rebels against all sound wisdom. So we need to figure out what sound wisdom actually means here.
Good point. What makes wisdom sound in this context? Is just good strategic advice? Moral guidance?
Yeah. What is it rebelling against?
Well, it seems to encompass all of that strategy, morality, practicality. But the defining characteristic of sound wisdom, according to these sources, seems to be its inherent resistance function.
Resistance, meaning?
Meaning sound wisdom is the input that challenges the easy path, the path of least resistance that selfish desire always prefers. It brings in complexity or maybe long-term consequences or ethical considerations that the desire just wants to ignore.
Okay, so sound wisdom is basically the external data showing why the running back's solo run to the left is actually a really bad move, even if it looks appealing to him in the moment.
Precisely. It's the reality check. And the sources are pretty stark about the consequence if this goes unchecked.
What do they say happens?
They say these selfish desires, when pursued in isolation, are followed without caring who gets hurt or any residual damages as long as we get what we want.
Ooh, that's blunt.
It is. The focus becomes entirely internal and entirely immediate. Any sense of broader responsibility or, you know, how it affects others, it just kind of dissolves.
Right. Okay, so let's make this really practical. We've talked about the theory, the problem. What does this deep dive mean for you listening right now? The sources give us three pretty sharp questions for self-reflection. They're designed to cut through that echo chamber we talked about.
Yep, the rationalizations.
Yeah. So the first one targets that avoidance habit. In what areas of my life am I seeking my own desire specifically to avoid real accountability?
That's a tough one.
It is. It basically asks, where are you hiding your plans? If you find yourself reluctant to share what you're thinking about a big decision, that might be a red flag right there.
Yeah.
Then question two. This one feels particularly sneaky. It gets at that self-deception where we think we're getting advice, but we're not.
Ah, the curated advice.
Exactly. The question is, what areas in my life am I seeking help from particular people simply because I know they will agree with me?
Ouch.
Yeah.
We look for the cheerleaders, not the coaches sometimes.
Right. We want that agreeable help that just feeds the desire instead of the sound wisdom that might actually challenge it. It feels like accountability, but it isn't.
It's confirmation bias dressed up as counsel.
Perfectly put. And the third question, this hits at pride, maybe a fear of looking incompetent. What area do I feel like or silently say to myself, I've got this, I'm capable, I'm smart, I really don't need any help?
That I got this attitude.
Yeah. Where does that voice get loudest for you?
And to make this even more concrete, the sources actually list specific life areas where this kind of isolated thinking, this lack of real accountability, is especially risky.
Okay. Like,
well, they mentioned big decisions, high stakes stuff. Yeah. Like considering a new job opportunity. You know, you might be focused on the salary, but external perspective could highlight hidden costs, culture fit, long-term career path.
Yeah.
Things you might miss.
Makes sense. What else?
Critical personal areas, an unhealthy relationship, for example, or even within a marriage. Isolation there can let really destructive patterns take root because there's no outside voice offering perspective or challenge.
Very true.
And finances, that's a big one they mentioned. Easy place for unchecked desires for immediate gratification to cause long-term problems if you're not getting sound advice or being accountable.
So the pattern is clear. the potential impact of the decision,
the more vital that external wisdom becomes.
Uh-huh.
You just can't afford to rely only on your own internal echo chamber for those things.
Yeah.
Hashtag tag, tag outro. So we've really unpacked this tension today, haven't we? This pull we feel towards self-reliance, maybe even isolation, versus what the sources argue is a proven need for external wisdom, for community, for accountability to achieve, well, real success.
Yeah, a system that actually works.
Right. And the core argument is that often when we choose to go it alone on something important, it might just be a symptom of wanting to avoid truths that feel inconvenient or bypass accountability we don't want to face.
Absolutely. Which leads us to that final thought, that takeaway question for you to wrestle with. It builds directly on distinguishing agreeable advice from sound wisdom. If the sources are right, if sound wisdom inherently rebels against those immediate selfish desires, then maybe, just maybe, any advice you get that feels instantly comfortable, completely validating, or just tells you exactly what you wanted to hear, maybe that's the advice you should be most suspicious of.
Interesting challenge.
So the question for you is, how do you tell the difference? How do you know if the input you're getting is genuine wisdom, or if it's just an echo of your own desires wearing a clever disguise? Are you actively seeking out the conversations, the perspectives that might actually make you a bit uncomfortable right now? That's something to think about. Your deep dive homework, if you will. We'll see you next time.